And hope you're having a great day so far. It is an exciting day in the world of space adventure. My goodness, a whole lot is going to hopefully be accomplished with a 10-day mission that will blast off tonight. So far, it is a go for this evening's liftoff, which will take place at about 5 o'clock our time. Right now, we can take you live to the launch pad. Be the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Right now, we're showing you who is going to be aboard Artemis II. It is quite an historic day. The first time NASA is putting humans on this rocket. It is also the first time we're sending a crew back to the moon since 1972. Of course, the difference this time is they won't be landing. They will be going all the way around it and deeper into space than anyone has ever been. So the window for the launch opens at 5:24 Houston time. Right now they're fueling up the rocket, making sure everything's a go. So we're going to find out what's happening, and I'll be quiet for a moment for you.
Operations. Again, this test is to just test the tanks that they can handle the pressure that will be happening during this first day of flight. Following this test, we will then transition into our topping phase on the upper stage liquid hydrogen tank, and it'll then transition to replenish. On the core stage, meanwhile, we are still in fast fill for the liquid oxygen tank, and we are in replenish for liquid hydrogen. Now, this is a very, very big and important milestone to me because, again, for those that have been following us along, especially with Artemis II, during our fast fill operations on the core stage liquid hydrogen tank during wet dress rehearsal one, that was our first test of this Artemis II moon rocket, where we tested loading the propellants on board. Teams experienced the liquid hydrogen leak shortly after getting into fast fill during that first test. They then performed a second wet dress rehearsal where they did not see any major leaks. Tanking loading operations went very smoothly, and it was a very successful test. And so it's great to see that throughout today's countdown for launch, there also weren't any significant issues or leaks reported during our liquid hydrogen loading phase on the core stage. So we are now in replenish mode for liquid hydrogen. We're about 84% of the way on the liquid oxygen tank. And we're also almost there on the upper stage for liquid hydrogen. Now I'll report out once liquid oxygen operations for the upper stage are also underway.
It's exciting to hear what's going on there in Florida. Just a little more than 7 hours before that launch window opens up. It is going to be an incredible day. We will be checking in with them all day just to see what's happening, to make sure it's all a go. Right now, meteorologist Allison Gargaro joins us, and I know that weather is certainly always a big concern, but yes. So far so good in Florida.
Oh yes, it's good. Looking great. So a few things that we look out for: A, cloud cover, which there are going to be passing clouds. Mm-hmm. B, we're going to be looking at the potential for some breezes on the ground. And yeah, that's actually going to be the biggest weather concern, although it's not a super big concern, which is good news. And there is going to be the chance for some showers several hours before the launch window opens. So again, like Melissa mentioned, launch pad 39B is where we are seeing this beauty of a rocket waiting for four astronauts to get inside and take off for their trip around the moon. So we have an 80% chance of a weather go. Now, little secret from a meteorologist, we actually get this info from the 45th Weather Squadron. That is down out in Florida. And at one point, it was all female meteorologists on the team, which is really cool. I'm not sure if that's the case anymore, but they are awesome down there. And the way that they give the weather report is actually the percentage of bad weather possible. So when I look at their website, it says 20%. But really, that means only a 20% chance that there could be weather interfering. But overall, it's an 80% chance where we're going to have the good weather. And look at that. Not a cloud in the sky. You know, I used to live down there. I have family and friends that live very close to where this is. And, you know, they've been talking about 60,000 plus people are going to be out and about there, Melissa, to watch. I mean, It is truly incredible, and we just can't wait. And I'm just glad the weather's going to hold out. Now, I know that this is a window, so that doesn't mean right at 5:24 our time that they would be launching, but it's just saying, hey, this is when we can, when conditions are going to be good on the whole route, because these meteorologists are not just looking at what we're seeing over Kennedy Space Center, but you know, this rocket is flying off quickly and got to make sure that weather conditions look good all the way around. So really looking forward to that. I just can't believe that they're going to be in orbit for quite some time.
And fascinating. And I talked to a doctor earlier who just talked about what all they will go through. And you think about 10 days and how quick that happens here on Earth. But they actually have to work out really hard up there just to not lose muscle mass in 10 days. Can you even fathom what that does? And,
no.
And you know, the fact that they are doing this to help everybody else on Earth, I think is so fascinating.
So crazy.
And then what's so interesting, too, is, okay, so they'll be orbiting Earth for 25 hours, mm-hmm. and then at that point it takes 4 days to get to the moon. It's just fascinating to me to see. So there's to give you an idea of what that path looks like. So we're talking about a high velocity journey, takes them thousands of miles beyond the moon, then they do that U-turn and then they will be right back home. So in all it will take 10 days, just like Ooh. Apollo. It will end with a splashdown homecoming into the Pacific. NASA says this testing mission is paving the way for landing on the moon in 2028, and then eventually one day sending humans to Mars. So they hope to learn so much for this. So it is about so much more than just saying, hey, we just circled the moon. I mean, they are going to be gathering all kinds of scientific information and projects. It's really remarkable to see what they're doing.
And for us, I mean, even this morning, I'm just looking through my window in my bathroom, like, oh, there's the moon. No. They're going to be like right next to it, staring at it, mm-hmm. getting to see all the craters. I mean, it is truly incredible, and that we get to watch it. I mean, do we know if technology, they can live stream for us?
No, I don't know. That would be nice. I would think they can do so much.
I know. I mean, with the satellites up there, it'd be really fun to see it happening, so you can feel like you're in it with them.
Yeah, and you know, they may not feel like letting us see them, though, because when I was talking to the doctor from UT Health Houston, who's actually in Florida right now for the mission, he was explaining to me what happens, especially within that first day. They almost feel like they have a serious, like a sinus infection, but they don't feel real great at first, but they get used to it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for walking us through all that. I'm thankful that weather's looking so good. Okay, right now, we're going to break in because we have some big news. After 40 long, miserable years for local families, a major breakthrough is made in the famous Texas killing fields cases in Galveston County. There has been an arrest. A news conference is underway right now in Galveston, where we take you live.
Felony counts of witness or evidence tampering. He was arrested yesterday afternoon. He's in custody, now pending disposition of his cases. My office is going to seek detention in this case, pending trial for various reasons. Mainly the circumstances of the case, length of the time, criminal history, and there'll be other things that'll be pointed out to the court. But what my main purpose here today is to convey a message to you that due to the concerted efforts of the law enforcement agencies in this county, this 40-year cycle of violence by these defendants against women, we're trying to make headway on it. And I think we made significant headway yesterday in getting the charge against Mr. Elmore and having him arrested, because the allegations are going to show he was involved with two of the murders against Laura Miller and Audrey Cook. And the allegations also include the evidence tampering was about disposition of their bodies. But I want you to know that although it's taken this long, there has been a lot of effort expended, agent hours, office hours, money and lab results, everything else by all of these agencies that are involved. You have the press release with all the agencies involved, but I want to reiterate who helped with this case so nobody's left out. The League City Police Department, Hitchcock Police Department, Galveston County Sheriff's Office, the Texas City Police Department, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Dickinson Police Department, the Galveston Police Department, and the Santa Fe Police Department. Last December, I was approached by Mr. Tim Miller, who's the father of one of the victims, Laura Miller. I understand his concern, his frustration, that there had been no closure to this case about Clyde Hedrick, who murdered his daughter, and James Elmore alleged to have assisted this in the disposition of her body. And at that meeting I had with Mr. Miller, I promised him that I would gather in all of the evidence that had been obtained to date for the last, since 1983, and I would take a new objective look at it, and depending on what evidence we had, we would seek appropriate charges against those persons and for those charges that we could prove. I'm here to tell you that we did that. I fulfilled my promise to Mr. Miller, but I had two of my ablest prosecutors in the office, Caitlin Willis and Adam Poole. This evidence was organized, reviewed, and that's what led to the charges yesterday. And I can also tell you that it wasn't just against Mr. Elmore. Clyde Hedrick, who died a little over a week ago, these charges on schedule had been prepared for Clyde Hedrick and for James Elmore. And but for his death a little over a week ago, almost 2 weeks ago, we presented his case to grand jury. I don't know, there was no ruling on that because he's deceased. But I'm telling you, there was no lack of effort to bring this thing forward, make it current, and go after those responsible. And so I want you to know that I'm very proud of the law enforcement agencies in this county today, because all of those efforts, we got to this point. But I also want you to know that this is not over with. Just because Mr. Hedrick's dead, Mr. Elmore has been charged and he's facing his charges, there are other active leads in the case. Therefore, we're not going to elaborate on a bunch of detailed questions, because there are some active leads in this investigation that can still be pursued to bring to justice some people who may have escaped justice thus far. And I also want to finish up by saying the efforts of law enforcement is also a testimony to the fact that some of these cold cases or unsolved murders that have occurred in the county that are not related to the Killing Fields cases, I ask anybody with information, any leads that could be brought forward to some of the area law enforcement agencies, do it, because I don't want anybody to feel like this is done, we're never going to solve this murder, therefore nobody's going to do anything about it. This is an example of, it took a while, re-examine the stuff, redouble our efforts, but we're able to solve one part of these murders. So nobody should feel demoralized or feel like nothing's going to be done or can't be done. Please provide all information to the law enforcement agency available, because there are a number of unsolved murder cases in this county that still need to be solved. And I know the agencies will not give up. If we've got leads to act on and information to move forward, we will do it. And we will prosecute if we get enough evidence. So, thank you. We'll take a couple questions, but...
Has Mr. Elmore made any statements?
Sir?
Has Mr. Elmore made any statements?
Well, nothing since his arrest.
Is there any evidence that you can share that links James to these actual crimes, anything at all?
Well, at this point, what's public record is what's in the indictment, the charges, what he was arrested upon. The defense will get be able to obtain the discovery as soon as we know who the attorney is and move forward on that. And then at that point, once it becomes disclosed, we would be able to discuss that further. But since this is a pending case, I don't want to get into that until an attorney's been appointed or hired, discovery's been made, and that disclosure's already occurred.
Kenneth, you said too that the looking into the other cases, in particular, the Shonda Rambler case over in Santa Fe. Santa Fe PD last year was digging up on a property where she had been. Elmore was the last person seen with her. They have said all along that she was a lead suspect. That's going to be one of the cases you're all looking into, his possible connection there.
We don't rule out any leads, any further investigation that we have at this point, so I don't want to elaborate on that.
How much was the relationship to Mr. Miller, Elmore, in the years?
Yes, sir.
How would you characterize the relationship? Are they friends, roommates, relations?
Who are you referring to?
Hedrick and Elmore.
Well, they were friends over the years.
For how long?
decades, since the 80s that we're aware of.
How much of an impact did Mr. Elmore's statements to Mr. Miller have on getting this investigation moving forward?
There are certainly statements that are made that will be useful in the prosecution of the case, but those were not the only statements made by him, therefore not the only evidence. There were other statements made by Mr. Elmore, and then we have other evidence that we would consider corroborating or backing up and proving up the truth of what he said.
You said earlier that Diedrich murdered Laura Miller. He had never been indicted for murder. What changed that you can see that today that hasn't been able to be said over the last 4 years?
Well, because I've only been in office, I haven't been in office 6 months. And so from my review, limited review, and discussions with my prosecutors who have reviewed it thoroughly, there was additional evidence that was forthcoming that allows us to bridge that, which is in addition, includes the evidence against Mr. Elmore. He fits in the whole sequence of events. It's not just these were separate events that occurred and can be isolated.
He had just done an interview with the detective that's part of Bell's task force. He dies a few days later.
Has there been a cause of death determined that y'all know of for that? Was it natural causes, suicide, what was it?
There was a finding in the hospital, is that exactly, that he took his own life.
Did he remove his straight tube? Is that how he did it?
That's the understanding of what happened from the doctors at the hospital.
In your presentation to the grand jury, was it for all four murders against Hedrick or just Laura and Audrey, or was it all four?
Yes, it was for all four and included the activities of Clyde Hedrick as well as James Elmore.
So you felt confident that you would have gotten an indictment in all four murders against Clyde Hedrick?
Yes, I don't know what the grand jury, that's their ultimate decision, but I was confident we could have obtained that.
Okay, we're going to take one more question.
Sir, were there things that were missed over these past few decades that you would say led up to this indictment now?
Things that were missed? No, this was a re-examination of what we had. There were some efforts here in the last couple of years that brought things a lot forward and solidified them and such that we could do what we did yesterday.
Real quick.
That's it. Thank you very much. We're done.
I was just going to say James Elmore's son spoke to us yesterday and said
traumatic moment just in the last 2 days as information came out that Clyde Hedrick has been arrested, now charged in the Texas Killing Fields murder, just most notably to Miller, the founder of Texas EquiSearch, who lost his daughter Laura Miller to murder 40 years ago, just has been pushing for more and more answers. They are talking about all the information coming out of that. We are going to keep you up to date as more information continues to come out. Right now, we'll take a quick break. Welcome back. We have some bonus coverage for you for today's launch. It takes a lot of group effort to make something exciting like this happen. So right now we're taking you to Fox 35 in Orlando to some of their coverage. They're talking about the huge business boom because of so many people visiting Florida for the big liftoff.
You seen that?
Tonight, yeah, it'll probably be really crowded. But I remember when the first shuttle went off. And the mall was there, and people just parked their cars right on US 1 and left them there. It was really a strain.
Right now, we're going to take a break from that coverage. We may go back to it. I want to take you live because Tim Miller, the founder of Texas EquiSearch, is speaking after that breaking news.
On Laura, Heidi, Audrey, and Donna, but do you know it is what it is? I don't want to say one thing. All the work's been done, and I don't want to say one thing to jeopardize this case at this time. But I will say, and it's been put out there, over the last 4 years, I spent minimum of 30 times with James Elmore. I can say this, there was times that I left James Elmore and he told me some stuff and I was as strong as I could be in front of him, but I had to pull over and just sob and cry with the information I got.
And he reached out to you, right?
He yeah, he reached out to me. For what reasons, I don't know. I don't know. And I could say this the first time I met him. He said, let's go for a ride. And I said, where? He said, let's go to Calder Drive. And that's where it started. And things just really moved forward from there. And I don't know. And I don't, you know, just looking back at it, it's certainly taken its toll. And I spent so much time with Edie's family and everything. We've cried together. We've begged for help. I think that Edie's dad, in the very beginning when Edie was found and stuff, you know, he had 32 cassette tapes, 1 hour on each side, 64 hours where he talked into it in a diary that he wrote in and wrote in. And he literally begged the detectives, please talk to him, please talk to him. They went, Laura Miller's name, or Clyde Hedrick's name was in his diary before Laura Miller disappeared.
Well, certainly there's a lot of mixed emotions, and this is bittersweet. The fact that my grandfather had a beat on Clyde Hedrick back in 1984, if he had been listened to by the current detectives at the Lee City Police at that time, these other girls would have lived a long life instead of the two monsters that murdered all of them. And I guess today, the way I feel, and I think I speak for my family, is that my grandfather's efforts did not go in vain. That his words are still speaking to the police and still trying to be heard. And maybe today is a result of all the work that he put in, all the searching, the fields, going and talking to people and doing his own investigation, because he just didn't feel supported that anyone was doing enough. And for us, it's sad that Clyde didn't get to pay for what he did on one hand. On the other hand, I'm glad that he no longer breathes the same air that we do here on Earth, and that he's met his maker. And I'm sure that he and my grandparents are looking down on us and saying thank you for not forgetting and for letting it go.
Have y'all had a chance to talk to Donna and Audrey's family at all since all this?
Just by text. Yeah.
What's the sentiment y'all been sharing together this weekend?
Absolutely. It's a club you really don't want to be a part of, but you got to support each other. And, you know, of course, thank God for Tim's platform, that he could keep this in front of everybody and you know, have the opportunities that the other victims' families didn't have because of the work that he does, and we're very grateful for today.
No.
Thank you, Tim.
You know, I've said this 1,000 times. I'll just say it one more time. But, you know, when I built that cross out there where Laura's body was found, and I'd walk up to it years and years and years ago, and I'd say, Laura, please don't hate your daddy, but I can't come out here anymore. I have to say goodbye. And literally, people, I'd be walking away and hear that little voice say, Dad, don't quit. Please don't quit. And I didn't know what the hell that meant. I think I do now. I don't want to slander anybody in this, but you know that the information, the things that I worked on and everything before, and I think Edie's family can testify to this also. The law enforcement back in that, they didn't want any of us talking together. None of us, period, the end. I don't know what the deal was there, and it really doesn't matter probably now. But that police department made me miserable. That police department made me the main suspect. That police department wanted Tim Miller to walk away. I don't know the reasoning. If they would listen to Hedy's dad, if they would listen to me, and if anybody thinks Audrey Cook, Laura Miller, Donna Prudhomme, Hedy Fye, Ellen Beeson. If anybody thinks that is the only five people Clyde Hedrick murdered, you're all living in a delusional damn world, because there's more to come, and I can guarantee you that. We're working with some detectives now. Also, and I anticipate a couple of these cases, I think we're getting some information, and I think we're going to find a couple more bodies. I think we're going to find a couple more, so this isn't over. You know, just because there's an arrest today and everything, don't think Tim Miller's going to walk away from Texas Equisearch and quit helping families. No, I think we're just getting started again. So, you know, again, I don't want to say anything about this investigation after 41 and a half damn years. I'm not going to jeopardize anything that all of us have worked for out there. We got other girls to find. We got other girls to find. We got closure to bring more families, and we're not going to quit, people. All these yellow shirts out here are the people that believe in what we do, and it's only because of our girls that were found out there. We made a promise that God and Lord would never leave a family alone. We're not going to break that damn promise. We got work to do, people. Thanks for y'all's support over the years. And it's been a long road. It's been a long road.
I just want to say, on behalf of my family, how much we appreciate the new district attorney, Kate, the assistant district attorney, Attorney Poole, and Detective Corey Wilson. We appreciate everything you guys have been doing for the last 2 years. And even though we weren't aware of everything, obviously your efforts have come to light. And we appreciate you.
You know, we were actually... We were actually doing a search, helping a detective, Corey Williams, in Hitchcock on a missing person case, which we're going to pick that up. Corey, can you come up? Can I have Corey for a minute? Anyhow, you know, and then Corey started asking questions about Laura and the Killing Fields deal and everything, and... my God, he sunk his teeth in it. He's went to Oklahoma. He's went to Louisiana. He's, I became very, very, very close friends with him. And when I felt so alone in this thing, Corey Williams, what he did, let me know I wasn't alone. We're working cases right now with Santa Fe Police Department and stuff. You know, looking back and what we do today, Laura's death wasn't in vain. I've met the most wonderful people in the world, and all I can say in closing this is God had different plans for Tim Miller than Tim Miller had, and I think I'm just going to keep doing a little bit of his work.
Tim, I know you said multiple times that you're disappointed and upset by Hedrick dying before he faced justice. But with the indictment this week and knowing that the indictment was coming for Hedrick, does that at least offer any type of satisfaction for you?
You know, it did. I mean, little does anybody know that after, the efforts I put in. After Clyde Hedrick got convicted on Ellen Beeson, I actually took Clyde Hedrick's house over. I spent over $6,000 cleaning out his house, and I found a lot of stuff in his house. I filed a wrongful death suit against Clyde Hedrick, and I won that, I guess, on a kind of a comical note. When I was cleaning Clyde Hedrick's house out, I found one of his checkbooks. Don't think I didn't mess with Clyde Hedrick almost up till the day that he died. Only 3 months ago, well, before that, I wrote myself a check out of Clyde Hedrick's checkbook for $24 million. 3 months ago, I sent a picture of that to Clyde Hedrick and said, would you please sign this check? I need my money. So I let Clyde Hedrick know I wasn't going anywhere. I let him know I wasn't going anywhere. So anyhow, I don't have anything else to say except, you know, we got work to do, we got girls to find, and God has blessed us. God has blessed us.
It's a good day today.
Truly emotional moments there, listening into Tim Miller talking about what it has been like for him as James Elmore just got arrested yesterday, charged in connection to the Texas killing fields and his precious daughter, Laura Miller, who he has fought to find answers for 40 years, among many other girls. After founding Texas EquiSearch, Tim Miller is responsible for just saving, I'm going to say, so many families. The questions that he has had to go through because he has helped find so many missing people and plans to continue that very mission. Right now, we're going to take a quick break and I'll see you on the other side of it. Hello again. We have a live look at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. The rocket that will send the Artemis II crew around the moon is getting all fueled up and prepared for the big launch. It sits on the historic launch pad 39B, which played a huge role in the Apollo and space shuttle programs and just so much more to come. We want to bring you bonus coverage right now. We're doing everything we can to give you what's going on with all of this from every angle, including our sister station Fox 35 in Orlando. Let's see what they're up to right now.
Just so praying that please NASA, please let this happen.
I know we are all thinking that way, and I felt like one little drop of rain. We do know that there's going to be a little bit of rain today, but it's supposed to kind of clear up. So rain or shine, you guys are going to stay out here.
Yeah.
And people have, thank you guys so much, and people have gotten their spots. Some people told me that last night at 11 p.m. they went and put their chairs out. Let's just kind of walk through, Garrett, and show you kind of what's going on here. I mean, it is packed with people. This was not the story at 7 a.m. Now this is, look, we got tables and chairs. People are ready to go. And of course, like I mentioned, it's starting to get a little more windy. So I think people are probably going to hunker down as the weather shifts gears a little bit. But I know that people, regardless, are just so stoked to see this launch today. And we are really, like I said, crossing our fingers, toes. We're praying everything we can to have Artie go. But talk about an Artie party. It looks incredible out here. And we actually met a woman from South Africa. We met a woman from Great Britain. So people truly from all over the world are here. Hello. And so we are so excited to be here and just cover this historic event. Garrett, we're going to send things back to you for now.
All right. Fox 35's Marley Capper. We appreciate you joining us out there this morning. Looks like folks are ready for a big day. And we appreciate you showing us that.
Thank you.
Let's go ahead and get you back to a live look as the core stage fueling continues right now. Liquid oxygen topping, liquid hydrogen replenish, more of the fueling continuing that has been going on for a while. We also, as I understand it, looking at the countdown kind of timer and the checklist here. Looks like communications are being activated inside the Orion capsule that will establish those radio frequencies from the spacecraft to mission control. Let's go ahead and listen in for a few minutes. This is coming to us live from NASA's live feed. Let's go ahead and listen here as the countdown continues.
Cause any potential damage to the hardware. For reference, oxygen needs to be negative 297 degrees Fahrenheit to be in a liquid state, and hydrogen, negative 423 degrees Fahrenheit. So very, very cold temperatures that the rocket is dealing with right now. Now again, we are underway for the Artemis II mission. This is the second Artemis mission in NASA's Artemis program. Artemis 1 was an uncrewed test flight. Artemis 2 will be the first crewed test flight. This will be the first time we send astronauts on board our Orion spacecraft. We'll be sending our commander Reid Wiseman, our pilot Victor Glover, and mission specialists Christina Cook and Jeremy Hansen on a 10-day mission around the moon. Now, from the rocket side, there aren't that many changes from Artemis 1 to Artemis 2, Most of the major sections of SLS really remain unchanged. Some of the differences are more in the details to really just provide our astronauts with a better ride in space. Some of those include some optical targets that are now on the upper stage as visual cues during the proximity operation demonstration. This will be a test for the astronauts to practice maneuvering Orion and practice approaching the upper stage while it's in a high Earth orbit. Another improvement for SLS was an improved navigation system. Also, communications capability between the ground stations and the U.S. Space Force Space Launch Delta 45, which controls the eastern range, that is responsible for kind of helping dictate when we are allowed to launch here off the Space Coast in Florida. Now, all of the four tanks on the upper stage and the core stage, they feed the engines that are down below. At liftoff, the four RS-25 engines will operate for the first 8 minutes during flight. The two solid rocket boosters that are on either side, those operate for only 2 minutes, and they provide 75% of the power at liftoff.
Hearing a little bit about what is going to be taking that capsule, that Orion capsule, that SLS rocket that we see there with the capsule on top of it, and all of the other things that are going to be powering it. That is what is going on, some of that fueling that is going on right now and going to be continuing a little bit longer before things are finished with that. And then we'll start seeing in the next hour or so a little more activity with the crew. They're supposed to suit up in about an hour and 10 minutes. We'll bring that to you live as well here as our live streaming coverage of the countdown to the Artemis II launch continues here on Fox Local, YouTube, and on Facebook. Right now, we are going to take a quick break here on Fox 35 News Plus. When we come back, we're going to...
It's fun to listen to Fox 35 and see what they have going on there right now. We're going to bring you closer to home and take you to Space Center Houston. They're going to have a huge watch party. It's already sold out this afternoon, but you can still go there, at least to Space Center Houston, enjoy all the festivities, just not that particular watch party. But earlier on Wake Up, Sally McAlina got to catch up with Chance Sanford to find out about the event and everything going on with it.
We open today at 10 a.m. to welcome in everyone as we want to celebrate the Artemis II launch. How exciting that it's launch day, huh?
So exciting, Chance. So I see behind you the pictures of the four astronauts, two of them from Friendswood. I know Christine lives in Galveston. I mean, this is such a huge day for Houston. Talk about the excitement that's been building and what's planned for today.
Sure. So it has been an incredibly exciting time here in Space City. And what better place at Space Center Houston, where we like to bring people in space closer together, than to come out and celebrate with us. Now, our launch party for this evening has been sold out, but these moments in time, moments like this that haven't happened since 1972, are the moments where you want to come to Space Center Houston and celebrate. So this has been an exciting time. We have lots of really fun activities planned throughout the day and into our launch party. But if you can't celebrate with us here, we hope that you celebrate everywhere and everyone takes a moment to watch this, you know, humanity's mission back to the moon.
So just to be clear, so the watch party is sold out, but people can still come by throughout the day for other activities and other, you know, like displays that are happening there. So we can get kind of close.
Yeah, you absolutely can get close, and this is a moment you're going to want to celebrate. You know, in fact, we recently redid a whole gallery focused on the Artemis mission. So come to Space Center Houston. Besides Artemis, we have 450 things to see and do, and we take you over to NASA Johnson Space Center, where the real astronauts that are going on the mission worked and trained every day.
It's incredible to think about how this all happened in our backyard. I'm sure, I would love to have a peek into Mission Control right now and see how they're getting ready for today's big launch. That would be so cool.
Hey, Chance, correct me if I'm wrong, don't you have a moon rock or a space rock there that we can touch or look at?
Absolutely. It's one of the key highlights of our exhibit gallery. You have the chance to touch the moon, just like the astronauts, not on this mission, but maybe some of the missions to come are going to get that chance to land back on the moon. We have one of the largest collection of moon rocks in the entire U.S., in the entire world for that matter. So you're going to want to come here, celebrate with us throughout the day, and then make sure you're ready to see it in that launch window that starts at 5:24.
See, if we touch those moon rocks, technically, we're closer to the moon than those astronauts.
Yeah, they say it's going to look like a basketball at arm's length when they make the flyby around day six. Oh, I can't wait. All right, hopefully all goes well tonight and we get a launch.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Chance, for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Hey, now you're in the know, and there's all the information right there on your screen. It is going to be an exciting afternoon, and this is another party that's going on at the Hilton. So everything you need to know right there, 5 o'clock with the launch window, 5:24-ish. You know you can count on us here on Fox Local to be covering every single moment of this exciting day. Up next, raise your glass with me. We're going to be talking about a very unique wine tasting opportunity for you here in Houston. Welcome back, and calling all wine drinkers, you have a very unique opportunity for a little tasting, something maybe you've never gotten to do before, and I have a very special guest here to tell us all about it. I'm talking about Christina Tucker, owner of Decant Urban Winery. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I can't wait to talk to you as a winemaker. What a fascinating life. And we're talking a tri-state, so to speak, event coming to H-Town, right?
Yes.
What is it?
So we are hosting the Rhone Rangers. It's a group of winemakers that are around the country, like you said. We are bringing together 26 different wineries. You can meet the producers, taste different wines, and find something new.
So we're talking Texas, Oregon, and California.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
How did all of this come about?
So the Rhone Rangers is a national group based out of Paso Robles. It's all geared towards promoting Rhone-style wines. So grapes like Grenache, Syrah, Viognier, very food-friendly wine.
And those are the ones that you really don't even end up hearing all that much about, right? So
right.
This would be a neat opportunity for somebody maybe to come along and say, hey, I want to learn something.
Yeah.
So what's it like? What is going to happen there?
So you get to meet the makers. That's what really makes this unique. So you get to meet the actual producers. It's not just sales reps. You get to try a number of different wines side by side. We're doing a big cheese and charcuterie spread and DJ, and it'll just be a lot of fun.
A little party going on. Where is it going to be?
Our winery, Decant. So we are in Garden Oaks here in Houston, so just north of the Heights.
And the times, all the information's right there on the screen?
Yes. So Friday, April 10th, 5 to 8 p.m.
And do people need to make sure they get those tickets in advance?
Yes. Grab your ticket in advance. Tickets are $65.
And just note to yourself, everybody, not this Friday. It's next Friday, right?
Correct.
Yeah. How many people are you expecting?
Last year, I think it was held in Austin, and they had 200 people. And in the Hill Country, we do another version of this at William Kirst Winery, and they had 300 people last year.
So you're probably expecting several hundred anyway, right?
Yes, yeah, pretty large.
That's exciting.
A fun event.
How did you become a winemaker in the first place?
I went to Texas A&M for grad school. I went to study horticulture. My research was enology, so it's the sensory science and chemistry of winemaking.
How interesting, and then it just went from there.
Yeah, it just went from there.
Do you ever stomp grapes?
Yes. You can join us next time.
Oh, so you do have opportunities for people to do that. I think I just think that's one thing that everybody always thinks about. It's a really fun time, right, for the harvest?
It's great. Yeah, it's a ton of work, but we love it, and we do everything in-house. So the crushing, pressing, fermenting, just like you said, you can join us and stomp.
Where are your grapevines?
We don't own any vineyards. We work with trusted growers.
Oh, okay.
And they send us the fruit, and we do all the making.
And does that take place here in Texas, or are they in California? Where are your vineyards?
So we work with growers both in Texas and in smaller regions of California, and then Washington, so the Columbia Gorge, about an hour east of Portland. And they send us the grapes, so we do it all.
And there is a difference in the taste between Texas, California, and Oregon wines, right?
Absolutely.
And so people can really learn about that, too. I always think of Oregon as almost like a little spicy or something. It's just a little bit different,
right?
Why is that? It's just all had to do with the earth and the climate?
Yes. So soil, climate, elevation, the temperature makes it more unique. So that's something I like to do. We have we used to have three Cabernets on our menu, so you could taste what a Texas Cabernet next to a Napa Cab, next to a Red Mountain Cab from Washington would be like.
And do you have a favorite, or are you not allowed to say?
I mean, I think it's like having a favorite child, probably.
Yeah,
but
so then you love them all.
Yes, I love them all. I love, these are my two favorite right now. So our Albarino and our Zinfandel, not Rhone varietals, which we won't be showcasing, but they won at the rodeo this year.
So oh, they did. Yeah. Well, those, you saved the lead for last. Congratulations. That's a big deal.
Thank you.
So remind us which ones won again.
This year, our Albarino, which is grown in the Texas High Plains, 100%
I'm not
Albarino.
Even familiar with that term.
Yeah, it's the type of grape, so it's a little more unique. I love it. Super crisp, clean, a little like
apricot. How do you, and that's the white one you're talking about?
Yes.
How do you compare that to like a Sauvignon Blanc or a Chardonnay? It looks more like Sauvignon because it's real clear,
yes,
right?
Yes, it's more like a Sauvignon Blanc, less green grassy, less grapefruit, more like citrus, apricot, melon.
What would you pair that with?
I mean, seafood, fresh guacamole. I do tacos. I do.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Pretty much, honestly, I pair wine with everything.
Have you ever won at the rodeo before? That's a big deal.
Yeah. So we've won every year since we started, which is
congratulations. Oh my goodness.
But this year we got to pour for the Texas Wine Celebration Day as well. So that was a lot of fun.
Nice. Oh, I bet. Well, I'm so excited for you. Well, congratulations again. We have all that information for Rhone Rangers right there for where it's going to be at Decant Urban Winery. It sounds like a very special event. Thanks for taking time to come in. So great to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a fun. It sounds like a blast.
Yes.
All right. There just happens to be something going on in Florida today, so we're going to take you back there live as the astronauts just get ready. It's going to be a big afternoon when that window opens up in the 5 o'clock hour, our time. It's super exciting as those preps continue for the SLS rocket. We have Fox 35 Orlando and their live coverage right now, and we're going to find out what they're up to at this hour.
It's ridiculous.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth.
That requires a much larger spaceport. America builds a new launch complex near Cape Canaveral on Merritt Island that we call Kennedy Space Center. And it paves the way for the second space program called the Gemini missions. Yeah, that's Gemini as in Jiminy Cricket, as NASA tries to explain, though people often call it Gemini. Either way, it takes astronauts beyond orbit where they can learn how to maneuver in space. NASA then moves on to the Apollo missions, the three-seater spacecraft to the moon. But sadly, we have our first deadly disaster with Apollo 1. A fire kills three of our astronauts during a mock countdown. We mourn, and we fall behind schedule redesigning the capsule. And satellite spy pictures reveal the Soviets are closing in on their moonshot. So NASA skips a planned test flight around Earth.
4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
And sends a crew on Apollo 8 to successfully orbit the moon and mesmerize the world.
And God bless all of you on the good Earth.
It basically does what Artemis 2 will do, but we'll get to that in a moment. Apollo 8 sets up Apollo 11.
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now.
Neil Armstrong takes the first steps on the moon.
One giant leap for mankind.
America wins the first space race. The Soviet Union goes into a slow decline and dissolves 22 years later, while the moon landing inspires American kids to take the next big leaps.
Because I remember as a first grader, them bringing in the black and white TV in my classroom and us all gathering around.
Charlie Blackwell Thompson will become the launch director for the Artemis program, picking up where the Apollo program leaves off.
It doesn't matter how many people are in this room. It's incredibly quiet. It's louder in here right now than it is on launch day.
But Artemis comes much later. President Nixon ends the Apollo moon missions in the 1970s. Remember, the goal is to show up the Soviets and win admiration around the world. We do this and just don't see the need to keep going back to the moon until we make a striking discovery. In 2008 and 2009, NASA probes discover hundreds of millions of tons of ice beneath the lunar surface. The top 3 inches are dry, but the next 10 feet...
Ken, that was Fox 35 News. We'll continue to bring you coverage of the historic mission of Artemis II throughout the afternoon. Right now, it's time to turn it over to Forecasting with Friends. Have a beautiful day. You're about to find out a lot more about what you can expect this holiday weekend. Have a beautiful day.